At this time of year, there's always a lot of talk about the pagan origins of Christmas. And so, for our first, I guess, holiday special for the podcast, I wanted to spend a few minutes and talk about the complicated origins of Christmas, because it's very simple to say that it's influenced by pagan rituals, but the true answer is actually quite a bit more complicated than that. Welcome to the Alchemical Mind. Before we get the episode started, of course, you know I have to talk about the Patreon at patreon.com/thealchemicalmind, where for just $1 a month, you can support this podcast and, of course, get additional content, early access to episodes, and best of all, the ad-free feed, so you don't have to listen to spots like this one or the upcoming ad. Join the others who are getting value out of listening to this podcast and supporting the show, like, for example, James, who asked that I plug his awesome band. Check out Zar Bomba on Spotify. There'll be a link in the show notes. And of course, Michael Smith, both of them joining me at the $5 level. And of course, the many others who support podcasts at every other tier, thank you so much for your support. Be sure to check out patreon.com/thealchemicalmind for more information, including all the great tiers available to you. Now, of course, I want to make it clear that it is true that there are heavy inspirations from pagan rituals that dominate the foundation of Christmas as a holiday, as a special occasion. So that is true. But again, it's not entirely true. We have to remember, of course, that a lot of our Western mythology and folklore and history and ideas come from the fact that we kind of evolved as a culture in the Northern Hemisphere. So there's a lot of talk about, for example, the winter solstice and this, that, and the other. And this is true, of course. But, you know, if you're, say, in Australia, which is also very much influenced by the progress of Western culture, the date of December 21st, which we in the Northern Hemisphere know as the winter solstice, is actually the summer solstice because of the fact that we have this precessional cycle and the Earth kind of spins at an angle. So I've heard the argument said that maybe we should start calling it the December solstice. I don't think it really matters. And to be honest, because the culture stems from a Northern Hemisphere origin, I think it's still probably fine to say winter solstice. And I would assume that for those that are listening in the Summer Hemisphere, would be somewhat familiar with the whole thing, right? I'm sure that, you know, if you grew up, say, in Latin America or in Africa or maybe an Asian country, maybe along the equator where it's much warmer, you're wondering why, you know, Santa Claus is wearing a heavy fur jacket and a hat and why there's reindeer and all these things. These are obviously all cold weather things. So let's talk a little bit about the history of Christmas before we get into the inspirations, because I think this is kind of important and it'll lead the way into where the conversation is headed. Because, see, the true story of Christmas is that nobody knows when Jesus was born. Now, this comes as a shock to some of you because, of course, traditionally, we see Christmas, December 25th, as the day that Jesus was born, that the Christ was born, right? And so, of course, if I say to you, well, nobody really knows, you might be maybe possibly offended by that fact. But the truth is that nobody knows. In fact, there's a really interesting tradition in the United States because, of course, this country was founded by Puritan sects trying to seek religious freedom from Europe. And one thing that's really interesting about the Puritans is that they did not celebrate Christmas. And you might think, well, how is this possible? How can a Christian denomination, a Christian sect, not celebrate the birth of Jesus? Well, and the problem is, of course, what I just said, because there's nothing in the Bible or any other text explicitly stating the fact that Jesus was born on this day. The Puritans kind of see it as anathema to their faith, right? Because they're Puritans. They believe in the purity of the religion. And anything that's extra is kind of thrown by the wayside. So because it's never mentioned in the Bible, they don't celebrate it. In fact, there's been some interesting historical anecdotes relating to this. You know, early on in the country's history, for roughly about 100 years or so, there was no celebration of Christmas. In fact, it was illegal to celebrate Christmas. You would be fined. I think it was, you know, like $5 or something. whatever the currency was then. In fact, 5 shillings, I guess, they would still use the pound. And so you would be fined if you celebrated Christmas, because it wasn't allowed. It was a made-up holiday, if you will, something that man created. That's pretty interesting. And of course, in the U.S., and I didn't look about in other places around the world, but I'm sure that's even more modern than this date. In the U.S., Christmas was not recognized as a holiday until 1870. And that's really quite interesting, because now it's become such a important tradition every year, right? And of course, there's a lot of talk about the fact that Christmas is losing its meaning and this, that, and the other. But if we really dive into the origins, we see that that kind of partially was never really any meaning anyway. And maybe the thing that it's becoming is, in many respects, the thing that it's always been. So that's always something really interesting to think about. Now, if you want to look about the origins, when Christmas was established, if you will, although it wasn't really called Christmas, and there's actually, if you look into it, 2 different Christmases. This is still actually celebrated in many countries by many different names. And we'll get to that in a second. But the first time that December 25th was declared as the birth of Jesus, so the first Christmas, if you will, was around the year 350. This was by Pope Julius I. I don't even know if he was actually Pope technically at this time. I think he was still just the Bishop of Rome, because the church wasn't really quite consolidated at the point. But Pope Julius I was the first one to announce the birth of Jesus as being December 25th. And this is, of course, very interesting for many different reasons. I've briefly mentioned the cult of Mithras that was very prominent in the Roman Empire at this time, in the early few centuries AD. And this was kind of a somewhat of a military cult, not really. There's a lot of conflicting information about what the cult of Mithras was. In fact, even kind of the holiday that's generally attributed to the cult of Mithras as the birth of Sol Invictus, the victorious god, which was, of course, December 25th, even that may not necessarily be of Mithraic origin. And we'll get to that. I've been meaning to do this episode on the cult of Mithras, and I keep pushing it back because other things come around. But we're going to get to the cult of Mithras, I promise. So it is true. And, you know, this cult of Mithras had kind of evolved somewhat concurrently with the rise of Christianity, you know, stemming even from before. And really, there were Christian influences before the birth of Jesus, which may seem anathema to some of you as well. But go check out my series on Gnosticism, where I spent, I don't even know, 12 episodes talking about Gnostic Christianity in particular, and the inspirations for that, coming from Platonic schools, Pythagoreans, the Hermetics, etc. But Aurelian actually did make December 25th a national holiday for the birth of Sol Invictus, the victorious sun, the solar deity of the Roman Empire at this point in time. And that was roughly around 274 AD, so there is, you know, kind of a tradition already going on as this being the birth of this messianic sort of savior figure, if you will. And there are, of course, a lot of similarities between Sol Invictus, between Mithras, between Jesus, between many other different entities and deities, like, you know, Dionysus, for example, Osiris. There's always been comparisons between these things, because there is something inherent about the savior archetype that persists throughout history. And of course, it makes perfect sense that Aurelian would make December 25th the birth of Sol Invictus, because this is already kind of part of a long-standing tradition. You, I'm sure, have heard of the holiday, the festivities of Saturnalia, which was kind of a weeks-long holiday celebration beginning at this time as well. So there's some crossover between the 12 days of Christmas and the celebration of Saturnalia. This also goes into similar traditions up in the Norse countries with the Yule traditions and the 12 days of Christmas. We'll get to that as well. So there's already a time here where there's a lot of celebration in celebrating some sort of divine birth or rebirth. And of course, again, being in the Northern Hemisphere, this makes perfect sense, because this is the time when the sun is kind of born again, right? And I've briefly mentioned this in other episodes, but I'll talk about it here real quick. On December 21st, we have the winter solstice, the December solstice, if you will. And that is the point at which, kind of for the next 3 days, the sun does not really move in the skies. Okay, so it rises and falls at roughly the same degrees compared to the horizon. And of course, this is rarely ever true, right? Because during after the 3 days getting us into the 24th and of course into Christmas and the festivities of Sol Invictus, the sun begins to rise again and get higher and higher in the sky. And then of course, once we get to the point of the summer equinox, they begin to lower down again, right? So that's why you have these two, I guess, holidays, if you will, but talking about the equinoxes and the solstices that happen. So winter solstice being the shortest day of the year, the longest night of the year, and this is kind of why, right? So you have this 3 days of kind of no sunlight, if you will, or very low sunlight. And after those 3 days, the sun begins to rise again in the sky. Of course, we are creatures of story, of myth, of folklore, and we have to kind of pass this knowledge on always in terms of stories. And so the stories vary by different traditions in the Northern Hemisphere, but they always kind of point to the same thing, which is the rebirth of the sun, right? So for some people, it's a literal sun, say like Sol Invictus, or something similar to that, you know, a solar deity, like Mithra or Jesus, Dionysus, etc. So it's very easy to say that, well, you know, Christmas is based on pagan traditions, but that's not entirely true, right? Because this is not just a pagan thing. This is something that dictates the way that humanity would live their lives from, you know, time immemorial. It's important to know when the sun is going to be rising so you can learn to plant your crops, you can know when to do your harvest, etc., etc., right? This is kind of the cycle of life. And you have to veil these things within stories in order for people to understand them and to pass this knowledge on to future generations. Otherwise, what are we going to do, right? These are agrarian societies, and agrarian societies have to know everything about the sun because everything revolves around the sun around them, right? Plants need sunlight to grow. People need sunlight to not be freezing to death. And of course, this kind of leads into the Yule celebration. Because part of the 12 days of Christmas stems from this tradition of lighting these logs in on the winter solstice. And these would be giant logs that they would light. And the story goes that they would remain lit for 12 days. And so that's why you have these 12 days of Christmas, if you will. Now, earlier, I briefly mentioned the idea of having two Christmases. And I remember this growing up because I grew up in a Latin American country. And we did have kind of two Christmases. We had Christmas on Christmas Day, December 25th, and then we had Three Kings Day, which is January 6th. And the interesting thing is that you would receive all your gifts on January 6th, Three Kings Day, because that's when the three magi, the three wise men, came from the east and brought Jesus' gifts into the manger. And so that's the tradition that would be followed. And this is true for many places around the world that kind of still follow a, I guess, more traditionally Catholic background. So Latin American countries, of course, in Spain, Portugal, and other countries influenced by them. But you see this kind of remnants of this in other traditions as well. So, you know, for example, in Ireland, I know that there's still this idea of Little Christmas. Now, Little Christmas is very similar, kind of different, though. Part of it is about giving women a special Christmas day, and this, of course, happens on January 6th as well, in the Little Christmas, in which women are supposed to just kind of do nothing and let the men run the household. Now, this might seem a little antiquated for some of us in modern society, but you know, there's still places that celebrate this kind of thing. And part of the idea always stems from the same thing, this idea of the magi coming to bring gifts. So for folks that still celebrate Three Kings Day, or Old Christmas, as it's known in certain traditions, then it makes perfect sense that this would be the case, right? So you might get your stockings on Christmas Day, but you wouldn't get your presents until January 6th. And then, you know, depending on where you are, there's different rituals that go with doing this. So I remember, for example, we would leave a bowl of milk out for the camels as they would ride down with the magi. And I can't remember. I think there may be cookies for the Magi, and then we'd have like a bowl of grass for the camels to eat, right? And you see this kind of tradition as well with Christmas, where you leave Santa cookies, and maybe some people leave something for the reindeer as well. I don't know. That would be kind of nice, though. And of course, if you listen to the Sky Deer episode that I just did in Symbology 101, you'll be familiar with this archetype of the reindeer, since I'm talking about it, because there are traditions in Norse mythology in which the sun god, or the main deity of the pantheon, generally being a sun god, would be pulled through the heavens by reindeer. Of course they would. So you have a lot of intermixing here of traditions that makes perfect sense. Now, to go back to the whole story of Julius, this is where things get a little dicey, right? So there is, of course, a school of people that feel like Julius picked this date for many reasons, particularly being that he was Bishop of Rome. And so if he kind of had this birth of Jesus being on the 25th, people would kind of already know to follow this tradition and worship in this way because of Sol Invictus, Saturnalia, etc. I don't know if I entirely buy that. I mean, yes, it makes perfect sense. And one of the things that Christianity has always been really good at, even though it may not seem that way, is in the absorption of native traditions anywhere in the world in order to appeal to the demographic that it's presenting itself. And this is very interesting, and obviously something that was learned from the way that the Roman Empire operated. Because the Roman Empire also operated in this way, where they brought in their gods and their temples and their culture, yes, and a lot of that was intermixed in, but you saw a lot of influence from the native population on Rome itself, in terms of language, of culture, of, in particular, food, of course, and trade. And this is important, right? Because whenever you want to, I guess, dominate a native population, you could do what we see in more modern times, maybe in terms of going someplace and slaughtering the native population. But the possibly better thing to do is not to do that, but to find a way to incorporate them into your society and find a way to give them a place to belong. To show them that, hey, this is better than what you had, but you don't need to throw everything away. And a lot of this is still seen through many different traditions. But since we're talking about Northern Hemisphere traditions, you do see heavy influence in terms of Celtic traditions and of course Norse traditions, including all the Germanic tribes, in what becomes Christmas. And that's very important to remember. Because a lot of the traditions that we have, for example, I already mentioned the 12 days of Christmas. You have the Yule log, that's also a Norse tradition. You have things like the Christmas tree. This is kind of a mix-mash of many different traditions because there was kind of a tree celebration within Roman ritual at this time. But you do see this, it being a pine tree generally is the accepted one. This is something that grows in much colder climates, much more northern climates. And there's a lot of other plants that tie in that are already very important to certain native traditions, right? So, for example, the whole idea of the mistletoe, this comes directly out of the Druidic traditions from the Celts. The, well, for one, the holly, but also the mistletoe were very sacred for these people. And the meaning obviously fits in very well into the tradition that Christmas ends up becoming. And that's why it's so simple to intermix all these different traditions and create something new in what becomes Christmas. Because, of course, the thing is, Christmas is about festivities, it's about joy, it's about gift giving. This is why you have the idea of the Yule coming from the Norse word jarl, which, etymologically may be where we get words like jolly, for example, right? So meaning festive. So this time of festivity is very important at this juncture for all kinds of traditions, because of course it has to be. It's been so cold, here the sun's gonna start coming back out soon, right? Yeah, we might have to bear a few more months of freezing weather, but the sun is returning to us and will return to us at the time of the spring equinox, which is where you get traditions like Easter and Passover and all these other things. So very important to remember the interconnectedness of these things and understand their origin points, right? This is why I started doing the Symbology 101 series, because things evolve over time, but they always have some nugget of truth that they begin from. And the nugget of truth here is just looking out at the stars and realizing how they influence the world. Now, the other idea about why Julius picked December 25th as the day that Christ was born is not to do with the idea that he's trying to copy these other rituals going on around him in order to entice new followers to join the faith. But, at this point in time, there's been a long-standing tradition that the birth of Jesus and the death of Jesus and the resurrection follow this cycle of fertility that is commonplace, of course, again, in all kinds of traditions. And so the death of Christ would happen 9 months after Christ was conceived, right? Here you have this whole idea of entering the sacred womb and coming out reborn, right? We've talked a lot about that during talking about the mysteries with the Gnostic sects in particular. So this is an idea that is being played around with a lot, yes, at this time, but it's a thousands of years old tradition, right? We see this including in Egyptian texts, in Hermetic texts, and many other traditions. Because, again, this is how mythology and folklore is created. You observe the way the world works around you, and you create a story around it to make it make sense. And so for these early Christians, it would make sense that Jesus would die 9 months after he was conceived, because this is the whole idea of, conception, going through the birth canal, being born, right? And it ties in directly with the idea of what happens at the winter solstice. And so, of course, because Jesus was at this point in time in the 3rd century, was the commemoration of his death was March 25th, 9 months previously would be, or 9 months later rather, would be December 25th. And so to me, that seems like a better reasoning for why this was done this way. And of course, there's really a few other interesting things that arise as a result of Christmas happening around this time of the solstice and the rebirth of the sun, in that this is actually considered a time very important for spirits. So in many traditions, if you passed away during the 12 days of Christmas, you were more guaranteed to, I guess, enter the kingdom of heaven, if you will. And there were special rites given to people that passed away during Christmas. And I find that whole thing interesting, because the idea of ghosts and kind of the thinning of the veil in terms of their relation to certain holidays, I've always found fascinating. And of course, the most obvious one for that is Halloween, and there's many reasons for that. We'll probably do an episode on it next year, I guess, on why I find that interesting. But this is true, of course, during Christmas, and this tradition's kind of resurfaced as we get stories like A Christmas Story, for example, which you have the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. And, this stems from long-standing traditions, particularly among Celtic tribes and Germanic tribes. So that's really awesome. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed this brief history of the pagan origins of Christmas, in parentheses, maybe? I don't know. I haven't decided on the title yet, but I hope you enjoyed it. If you celebrate Christmas, then I hope you have a wonderful and festive Christmas. I hope you get everything that you wished for. Enjoy your Christmas holiday. And we'll be back in a few days with a brand new episode. Thank you for listening. And as always, remember that you are it.